Well, hi, everybody. Good afternoon. Sorry there was no show last night. We're doing a little special show today. This is Saturday. Gosh, oh, mighty. We are getting mighty close to Christmas. 21st, just a couple of days. And you know, if you wanted to remember free domain and your little Steph bot in your Christmas cheer, it would not be rejected. I'll just tell you right now, it would not be rejected. All right. Do we have any fans? I'm sorry. It would be just great, of course, if my daughter were here. She's not at the moment. She's assiduously doing her math homework because she's a more industrious person than I was at that age. I'm sure for good reasons. But do we have any fans of the song quiz? Do we have any fans of the song? I've got an interesting one. Let me just log in here. We could do ourselves a wee song quiz, or of course we could just jump straight into ye old show. I'm always curious if people can get it from the first line. Always curious. Yes, all right, here we go. Are you ready? Vocal warm-up time. La, la, la. All right. Trailers for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No phone, no pool, no pets. I ain't got no cigarettes. But 2 hours of bush and broom. Buys a 8x12 4-bit room, mama. Man of means, by no means, king of the road. Oh, it's a great song. Third boxcar, midnight train. Destination, Bangor, Maine. Old worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found. Short, but not too big around. I'm a man of means, by no means, king of the road. All right, it's a great song. And it's actually good. It seems kind of honorable, but then at one point he says, and every lock that ain't locked when no one's around, you know, a little bit seedy, but it's a great song. Roger Miller, whatever happened to that guy? Did he die young? He died young. I have this vague memory of people in the arts who died young, but that would certainly be one of them. So, yeah, so it's a great song. Randy Travis, did he do one too? Randy Travis did a version of that. Yeah, it's a great song. It's a great song. So, yeah, freedomain.com/donate. If you would like to help out the show, it would, of course, be deeply, humbly, and gratefully appreciated. And if you have comments, questions, issues, challenges, problems, did a really good call-in today about a guy from a pretty hellacious family who was going back this weekend. And I was like, I feel we should talk. And we did. And it was a very, very powerful conversation. That's what I love so much about doing this show, man. It is a real deep and great honor to be able to peer so deeply into the hearts of people. I've always been rapidly curious about human nature, human behavior, human choices, as is the case with my own, of course. And to be able to peer this deeply into human souls is just an incredible honor. And I really, really do appreciate it. Did you know up to 85% of star systems are made up of two or more stars? The Clooney-Pitt thing, I suppose. So, people were saying, somebody was saying, every, quote, peaceful parent I know has the worst behaved kids. The only peaceful parent in my family's kids terrorizes family gatherings while everyone else's kids are a delight. And Mike the Cerno replied, "Doubt it. All of our peers are no spanking and the kids are civilized and can hold full conversations from an early age as they learn to communicate and question rather than live in fear of a belt." Yeah. I mean, I've done the neglectful parenting versus peaceful parenting is really, really important. Did you know also that there's a village in Italy that's so surrounded by mountains, it gets its sunlight using a giant mirror? It's the kind of thing that doesn't seem to be true, could be true. I thought it was kind of interesting and funny. As far as the economics go, it took over 200 years for the U.S. debt to reach $12 trillion. $12 trillion is how much was added in the 4 years between 2020 and 2024. Thank goodness to have the exit ramp, the off ramp called the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin. So let me ask you this, since we're here. This is an interesting question. What book changed your perspective on life more than any other? What book changed your perspective on life more than any other? Somebody was kind enough to reply to this saying, "Anything by Stefan Molyneux." I appreciate that. It does keep the juices flowing to know that the appreciation and change is occurring. And which book, and just doesn't have to be me, obviously, probably isn't, but which book changed your perspective on life more than any other? I think for me, it would have to be The Fountainhead. The Fountainhead was a very powerful book. All right. Somebody says, "I'm rarely able to listen live from Australia due to our time zone and my work commitments." Great singing. Thank you. I appreciate that. And of course, the other challenge with Australia is every now and then, of course, the internet seems to get swallowed by either a sea crocodile, a giant spider, a python, or the government. Steph, how often do you listen to new music? I sometimes find myself stuck listening to the same three or four albums. Well, mighty, a minor confession. One, I wrote about this in my novel, The God of Atheists, that at some point in your life, you just start looking for cool live versions of songs you already like, rather than digging into new music. I really don't get a chance to listen to new music. My daughter will introduce me to new music from time to time, but our tastes are not significantly overlapping at the moment. She's into video game music that has a bunch of rap in it, and I don't really know the backstories of the video games as a whole, so she's into lore music. I think it's also called nerdcore, and I like some of the songs, but nothing that's hugely grabby. If I have a little bit of time to listen to some music, I will, and it's rare, like maybe once a month, I'll sort of half an hour sort of space out and just put a headphones on. But I'll generally listen to something I kind of already know. I have not released a call-in with the guy who dated the Ukrainian lady, no. So I don't really get a chance to listen to new music. Of course, it used to be the case that the bands that I liked would release new albums, but they're either dead or too old, or the new albums suck. Like I listen to the new Paul McCartney, listen to the new Sting, listen to the new Yes. Oh man, it's bad. I hope I'm not that guy who keeps going long after creativity is done. Let's see. The book The Present and Almost, The Case Against God. Yeah, Atheism, The Case Against God's a very good book. That is a tough question. Yeah, it is. Honestly, music has just been so irretrievably dumbed down. I mean, when was the last time you heard a genuinely, fairly jaw-droppingly unusual or different song? The arpeggio, down, 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 that opens up, Shine On You Crazy Diamond. Like, when was the last time you heard a song where it's like, damn, I've not heard that before? You know, it's always like breathy pop singer aching for love, rap thing in the middle, maybe a bit of guitar, and then fade out. Now, of course, in the past, you know, you had stuff filtered out. I mean, one of the things I really love about Queen is just the wild creativity and their versatility. They did everything from jazz to ragtime to country to hard rock to ragtime. They did just a wide variety of music. Of course, they did, Freddie did opera with Montserrat Caballé and so on. So it was just really, really wild stuff. It's really hard to find good new music. There just doesn't seem to be the same devotion. Now, music is just about money. I mean, it's really just about money. And it doesn't have much to do with people wanting to deeply express their creativity. And if you're not in it to really explore and challenge your creativity, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Like, well, so some Rihanna album, they just basically got a whole boatload or vanload or stable or barn load of people to just sit down and write lyrics and music and so on. It's just really, really sad. Due to recent mass immigration under Trudeau, writes someone, Canada's sex ratio has become very skewed. Canada now has a worse sex ratio in that age group than China, Pakistan, and India. Yep. That is destabilizing. Now, I thought this was interesting as well. Mike Cernovich wrote, we are, quote, peaceful parents, no spanking. This experience has shown me that boys were bred for violence. My son will try throwing the cat down the stairs, tossed a baby monitor at my wife holding our eight-month-old, and otherwise is a psychopath. None of this is learned behavior. I mean, I was around some boys, and some boys were like that, and a lot of boys weren't, and I have friends, of course, who have sons, and they're not that way, so I don't know. It's an interesting question about how much of it is learned and how much of it is innate, how much of it is environmental, how much of it is some X factor. Very interesting. I would not take that as just boy nature, though. Canada finally reaching number one, yay, in household debt as share of GDP. So Turkey is only 11%, Mexico 16%, Indonesia 16%, Russia 22% of household debt as share of GDP, Saudi Arabia 32%, Brazil 34%, South Africa 34%, India 37%, Italy 39%, Spain 48%. Germany, 52%, China, 62%, France, 63%, US, 73%, UK, 80%, Canada, clocking in, household debt as share of GDP. Bing, bing, bing. Yes, we have achieved the summit and the peak, the Everest of catastrophic hedonism known as 103%. Household debt as share of GDP, 103%. My God. Thank God. Once more, four Bitcoins. Pearly Things, a great channel to follow, of course. 60% of women under 30 have been on some sort of SSRI or antidepressant. Wowzy. Poor Nick Fuentes got people hammering on his door. And what was it? As of 2 days ago, he posted, the killer parked his car in front of my house and approached my door with his pistol drawn and what appears to be a crossbow. I was live streaming at the time. He rings the doorbell, tries the doorbell and yells, yo, Nick. And then I think he got chased off by the police and ended up being shot. I think he was wanted in a triple murder and, well, that is sad. That is sad, tragic, horrible. And that's really the purpose of doxing, right? The purpose of doxing is to weaponize lunatics, right? All right. Does age or success affect creativity? Well, you know, it's the 15-minute window, right? So, you know, the way it generally works with bands is they release a bunch of journeyman albums that are appreciated only by a small minority of generally hardcore fans. It's sort of the Dire Straits phenomenon. Love Over Gold versus Brothers in Arms. For Queen, it's like Queen 2 and Sheer Heart Attack versus Day at the Races, Night at the Opera. And so you get a bunch of albums out, you do okay. And then there's just this wild, massive change, massive eruption. And you get these monster albums. To some degree, it was the Bruce Springsteen prior to Born in the USA. And you get this monster album. Maybe you get two monster albums, maybe three. And then you just end up with everyone saying at your conscience, please God, don't do the new stuff. Please God, don't do the new stuff, right? That is where people are at, right? I hope you enjoy my new box set. All right. So with regards to creativity, there seems to be, you seem to have a store of it, you know, like when you vomit, there's only so much you can vomit. When There's only so much toothpaste in the toothpaste tube. And in general, there seems to be this buildup of creative potential. It gets maxed out. And then after that, it seems to bleed dry. I mean, think, of course, of Monty Python, right? And the brilliant work they did in the 70s and The Life of Brian, of course, a great movie. And Knights of the Round Table movie they did. It'll come back to me. And then they did The Meaning of Life and things coming. And, or you think of even John Cleese himself, right? I mean, did amazing, funny work, Fish Called Wanda, Monty Python and Holy Grail, Fish Called Wanda and so on. And then I never saw the sequel to it. And, you know, what has he done for the last 30 or 40 years other than cuck to the left as a whole? He did end up going on a comedy tour, but only because he was broke, right? I think he literally called it the alimony tour. So I don't know what it is. I think that there has to be something that is driving you that is more than just creativity. Creativity burns itself out. I hope, at least my goal, my thought is, I've been cooking now. I think I've been pretty creative. I started writing in my teens. I'm now in my 50s. So I've had a good 40 years of pretty good creativity. And I include, of course, in that, you know, theater school, playwriting, directing. I include in that my acting. I include in that even the creativity that I did in coding, because coding can be very creative. It's just a different kind of writing and a different kind of philosophizing. And then the fiction and nonfiction that I've done, I think that some of my fiction is even better now than it was in the past. So that when you get your sort of peak energy and creativity is in your 20s, but I think if you have a moral mission, then you can continue to do interesting and good work. But without that moral mission, there is that sense of, okay, well, I've proven everything. I've got all the money. I'll still do it as a hobby because I've got to have something to do, but there's not that same energy and urgency and fervor. You have to have a little mania in you in order to be creative, because you have to have something that overcomes inertia, doubt, hesitation, and self-criticism, right? So everybody who writes, in particular, if you write creatively, you have inertia, you have doubt, self-criticism. The inertia is, I'll start it soon. The doubt is, will it be any good? And the self-criticism is, while you're writing, is it any good? So you have to have something to push through inertia, doubt, and self-criticism. And the reason you push through things is because, for me at least, I have a moral mission to explain the world and make a better future. So that's what keeps me. That's what keeps me going. Steph, what does it mean when someone calls a certain band gay? Do they just not like it? Someone told me Queen was gay. Well, I mean, Freddie Mercury was not the straightest arrow in the bench shop. I don't know. So there is, of course, a stereotype of masculinity that it has to be about, you know, tits, ass, beer, sports, and all that kind of stuff. And if there is sort of deep moral sensitivity or deep artistic sensitivity and sensibilities, then if there's sort of tenderness and so on, that's not masculine. It's basically the idea that masculinity is sociopathy and any more tender feelings are gay. And that's, of course, not something that I believe is true at all. I mean, there's some very macho Queen songs, right? Fat Bottom Girls is not about how to sit comfortably. Music is also made to push propaganda now. Record labels won't sign people that won't push the agenda. Yes, that is very true. And it's something I really didn't understand when I was trying to get into the art world as much, that if you're not pushing the propaganda. Like when I was at the National Theatre School, they absolutely loved me. For the first semester, they love me. They're like, oh, you're such a good actor. You should like forget about the writing stuff. Just do the acting, right? And then after they found out about my politics, they just hated me. Just hated me. So. All right, Steph, how you are, in my opinion, doing better work outside of UPB than in your past. It's truly incredible looking at your library of work and how it has improved. Well, thank you. Again, it's the moral mission. It's the moral mission that simply demands quality. If, you know, it's the laws of diminishing returns, right? So does Stephen King, uber cuck to the left, does Stephen King need more money? Well, no. I mean, he's worth, what, $400 million, some crazy sum, right? So does he need more money? Does he need more success, more fame, more accolades? I'm sure he'd like to write a quality novel rather than just an intense novel, right? Stephen King writes the way that a cattle prod hits your lower spine. It's like all of the fear-based women's stories, right? So women's novels are always kind of the same in sort of the sort of popular stuff. It's always like, yeah, I met this guy, you know, he's tall, he's good looking, great job. But I don't know, man. After the initial thrill and excitement, there's something a little bit off about him. I'm not sure exactly what it is. He seems fine. A couple of quirks, a little flash here and there. It's kind of this unease. And, you know, the sexiness of the guy you can't quite read who has potentially dangerous quirks that could flower into full-blown danger. That's chick novels, right? Chick novels are all about, he seems great, but fantastic guy, however, right? It's all about that. And they're all there designed to program women to avoid men, right? To program women to not like men, to program women to be suspicious and fearful of men, right? All right. Do you think Elon will address how posts about Nick Fuentes' dark stayed up with millions of impressions? I'm sure that he's deferring to his lawyers on that. Somebody says, We went to an Adam Harvey, wrote a song about his mom with dementia called Remember Me. My wife and I thought it was creative. Huh. Thank you. I appreciate that. My wife and I, that's the same concert, right? The Present and Just Poor are still the best books I've read in a long time. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny because I had to rewrite a chapter of Just Poor because one was missing in the middle where Mary makes her big transition. And then I found it later. And I'm like, I can still write it. I've not heard of Leafy, but I appreciate that. Thank you. The Present and Just Poor, I think, are really, really good. The Future is great. I like it a lot, but The Present is more visceral because The Future, of course, being a science fiction novel, is still a lot more abstract than that. So, yeah, AF Post wrote, Nick Fuentes reports an armed attacker attempted to kill him at his home. The assailant, armed with a pistol, crossbow and incendiary device, is now dead. Nick Fuentes is unharmed. Yeah. Andrew Tate has had his charges, his case dismissed. And he is vowing vengeance. And I think that's very interesting. It does seem to be that he was persecuted in ways that were not particularly lawful. Like, what, they raided his house 5 times. They took his money. They took his cars. They threw him in solitary and Romanian dungeon style, cockroaches in the beds kind of solitary. And now he wishes to take the fight back against those he claims, and it seems to be with some pretty damn good justification, persecuted him unjustly. And if he was persecuted unjustly, and it seems to be the case, then my personal opinion is that there's no vengeance that he could take that I would say, ooh, that's too far. Ooh, that's too much. Like, personally, if you're going to mess with someone's life to that degree, what's it, 3 years plus, he and his brother arrested and imprisoned and investigated and threatened and so on. Whatever vengeance he takes, I really don't care. I mean, just want to point that out. Like, whatever vengeance he takes, and I think he's got time and money and resources, and certainly he has the emotional motivation. But it is hard to imagine of a vengeance that he could take legally, of course, that would go too far. So that's interesting. Alex Berenson is reporting new unreported truths on a stunning finding. Some people injected with mRNA vaccines appear to make spike protein for years. The reason is unknown, but could be because genetic material from the vaccine is integrating with human DNA. True or not? I take everything with a grain of salt, but it's very interesting. In general, this is in America, 1 in 10 criminals commit half of all crimes. If we send career criminals to jail for longer, we can slash crime rates. And I think California, same diff, one's nicer, warmer. But California has overturned the recent proposition that allowed you to steal up to, what, $950 or something like that. So I thought this was really good. This was really good. Danish Bashar, narc abuse coach, narcissistic abuse coach. He said, a key indicator that you're in a narcissistic relationship is when things only remain peaceful as long as you suppress your feelings, thoughts, and opinions. This is worth, because this is society as a whole, right? A key indicator that you're in a narcissistic relationship is when things only remain peaceful as long as you suppress your thoughts, feelings, and opinions. It's really powerful. It's really powerful. This guy wrote, I was so terrified about this astronomy final exam today, but then I open it and see the first question. All right. See if you can puzzle your way through this one. See if you can puzzle your way through this one. Question 1.6 points. Star A is 100 light years away from the Earth. How long does it take for light from star A to reach the Earth? Star A is 100 light years away from Earth. How long does it take for light from star A to reach the Earth? The answers are 8 minutes, 100 years, 500 years, 200 light years. 8 minutes is a tricky one because that's the time it takes for the sun, the sun's light to hit us, 93 million miles, right? So 100 light years, how long does it take for light to reach the Earth? That's kind of chilling that would be a question. You know, the great dumbing down is just appalling. It's just appalling. Now, there was a trickier one, though. The question 7.6 points. Compared to the mass of an object on the moon, the mass of the same object on the Earth would be negligible, much smaller, zero, the same. Compared to the mass of an object on the moon, the mass of the same object on the Earth would be negligible, much smaller, zero, the same. Now, personally, I think mass and weight are different. My mass would not change on the moon, in other words, how much I displace in the volume of my being, my weight would change because the moon is only 1/6 the gravity of Earth, right? So I would weigh less on the moon, but my mass would be the same. Mass doesn't change depending on where you go in the universe. So I think that's a bit of a tricky one, but I think the other one is just kind of wrong. It's just sad. It's just sad. All right, let's see here. How do you think people who are pursued should move? People are saying Nick needs to move to an apartment with 24/7 security. I mean, that's a decision everyone has to make for themselves. I guess one of the questions is, and I don't know the answer to this, does Nick Fuentes prefer the publicity and is willing to accept the danger? And I suppose that's a decision everybody has to make for themselves. Obviously, if you want safety, you'd move to a place that was sort of gated and had security and so on. But and then the other challenge is then people just view that as a challenge to further pursue you, right? Once you're in the sights of the psycho's guns, it's pretty hard to wriggle out. Somebody says, I used to follow you years ago, but forgot you existed until I saw an old vid of yours on X, then tracked down your local site. Are you still cancelled everywhere? Well, the only place I've been uncancelled from is Twitter. And I certainly appreciate the gesture, and I had a very compelling argument from someone about going back on Twitter. Somebody sent me something. I'll do that as a separate show. But I would say that, yes, the only place that uncancelled me was the guy, it was the place the white male took over. So what can I tell you? I mean, white males tend to be the most into freedom of speech. White males tend to be the most free speech absolutists. And so that's not too shocking that it moved that way. Apparently you want to go to space? I would be terrified. I would love to go to space. Ooh. Ground control to Major Tom. Yeah, I'd love to go to space. I could be fascinating. Weightlessness, seeing the whole world, seeing sunrise over the curve of the Earth, or the flat tabletop of the Earth, if my prior listener was making a better case than I thought. Are you back on Twitter, or your pride won't let you go back? See, my friend, this is why you should have been Oh, are you the... Oh, yes. You're the guy from... Are you the guy from TikTok who keeps commenting that I'm bald? So this what I you should really follow me as a whole because this what is called a false dichotomy. Are you back on Twitter, or your pride won't let you go back?
Right, right.
So if I was really into pride, then pride would have something to do with income, success, influence, and reach. In which case, pride would put me back on Twitter, right? Because Twitter would be by far the largest platform that I would have access to since my deplatforming, right? Because I had like, what, close to 400,000 followers on Twitter. I'm sure there'd be a whole bunch. I get live streams and income and all that. So there would be, if pride were my motivating factor, which would be a sort of form of vanity, then going back on Twitter would be the thing to do, right? So this is what's called a false dichotomy. And I'm sorry that you were raised this way. Like, I really am. I'm really, really sorry that you were raised this way. So a false dichotomy is when you say, well, it's either this or that. And it's like, why on earth would I let you define my choices? Like, it's just a weird thing to think of, right? Why would I let you define my choices? You either go back on Twitter or you are overly proud and at fault. And it's like, why on earth would I let somebody else define my choices and free will? I'm sorry that you're surrounded by people with whom this works, but that is a very sad approach and perspective. I'm glad you're here. Don't get me wrong. When you were a child, did you expect that you would be bald as an adult? Well, I will not say my mother had quite thin hair. My father is bald. I would say that I was not overly shocked when it began to happen, but I'm very thankful that it did because it caused me to grow up rapidly. And when I was a kid with hair, as a teenager with great hair, I was too good looking. I was too good looking. So yeah, that would not have been beneficial to me at all. And so it was better for philosophy that nature took my protein strands. Absolutely better. And of course, you know, I don't know. Have you ever seen someone? It's really sad. It's really, you ever seen someone who's proud of their hair? Who feels superior because of their height or their hair or their eye color or something like that? Like, you know, I'm 6 foot tall and blue-eyed. And square-jawed and you know, fairly well-formed as far as exercise and muscles go. And, you know, but the idea that I would take pride in any of that is really, oh, look, I have blue eyes. Well, I guess I earned that, right? At least you've got an excuse to wear cool hats. You're not sure what this guy, I'm really not sure where this guy's coming from. But, yeah, I mean, hats, not hats. What I like about this hat is I don't have to put a logo on, right? Because I don't have to put a logo on the screen, right? Because if somebody shares something and there's no logo, right? But I got a logo here, right? It's a nice way to wear a hat. So, but yeah, I do have to wear hats because I don't want to get sunburnt on the old noggin. But there's a lot of women, honestly. If you're not bald, you don't really get this. There is a lot of women who prefer bald. I can't tell you, like, when there is occasionally floating around a quote cure for baldness, as if baldness is some sort of illness, which it's not. But every now and then, if there's stuff floating around, cures for baldness, my wife is like, nope, you are not allowed. I love you just the way you are. Don't change a thing. You're hot the way you are. Don't change a thing. There's a lot of women who like bald because of the indication of high testosterone. Are there a lot of women who prefer short? Well, evolutionarily speaking, yes. Because if women didn't prefer short, there'd be no short, right? So some women do prefer short or are fine with short. So men won't accept a bald woman. Women will accept a bald man. Or to put it another way, the excess testosterone that often drives being bald has many more benefits for women than costs, because the extra testosterone allows you to be more punchy, more aggressive, and more assertive, and so on. And that's obviously quite sexy for women, right? Like, I was talking with my daughter the other day about female women and what is attractive to them. And what is attractive to a woman is when you have a life that's great and you invite her along. What's not attractive for a woman is when you stare at her and bring her flowers and write her poetry, and it's just all about her. Because she's like, well, that's great, but that's not going to feed my kids. You just donated? Thank you. I appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate. So men won't accept bald in a woman because men don't generally want high testosterone women. So they want feminine women. And so the estrogen, which keeps the hair, like if I took estrogen, my hair would grow back, right? So female hair is a marker of estrogen, which is a marker of femininity, which is what men are looking for. I mean, masculine men are looking for feminine women. And so one of the reasons why there are so many cucks and soft boys in the world these days is because women have been encouraged to take on masculine traits. And because women have been encouraged to take on masculine traits, men have become progressively more feminine, which is obviously quite tragic as a whole. So men won't accept a bald woman as a whole, but women will accept bald men because the payoff for extra testosterone, even if you like hair, the payoff is better, right? Hair doesn't feed the kids, but assertiveness or aggression does. And so bald as a marker for assertive and aggressive is attractive to women because they're looking for more masculine traits, whereas bald is not attractive for men. Bald in a woman is not attractive for men because we're looking for feminine women, right? All right. Some guys get, quote, hair tattooed on their heads. Oh, yeah. I was talking about this like 15 years ago. You can get a tattoo of hair and then people think you're bald by choice until they touch you and it's smooth. Smooth as a baby's butt. So there are women who are fine with short. Yeah, there are totally women who are fine with short. Because height has its own challenges and problems, right? So tall guys tend to live less long. Tall guys have knee problems. Tall guys have back problems and sometimes hip problems. So height is something that is a problem. And the other thing, too, is because, remember, we evolved in localized tribes, right? So my wife is Greek, and in the Greek village where her parents came from, there were no tall guys. Like the tallest guy was like 5'6 or 5'7. And so Greek women are sort of famously, I call a wifelet, like compact. My wife's a little under 5'2. So women, as far as height goes, women weren't supposed to be exposed to like the 6'5 Danish guys as a whole, right? Women were supposed to be exposed to guys who were tall in their environment, right? In their sort of localized environment. So the tall pygmy, right? The pygmies are short relative to Danish people, but they're a tall pygmy guys. So the women are supposed to choose taller guys in their local genetic environment, not from all over the world, right? I mean, I'm probably true with penis size as well, right? So as far as height goes, men have become supersized because women are now looking at tall guys all over the world, right? So some Japanese woman, you know, if you go to Japan and you're like 6 foot tall, you're like a head above most people, right? So the Japanese women are supposed to be comparing a tall Japanese guy, not to some Western guy who's 6'2 or whatever, right? So it's become sort of supersized outside of the local genetics. So a tall guy in a Greek village is a short guy in Denmark, right? And so the Greek women are supposed to just choosing the tall guys local, not the tall guys around as a whole, right? All right. Yeah, Tim Pool got a big property with security at the entrance. Yes, that's right. King of the Road. Which of Dostoevsky's works had the most impact on you? I've never read his works. I just purchased Devils, The Brothers Karamazov, and of course, Crime and Punishment. Well, without a doubt, it was Crime and Punishment. I did work my way through The Brothers Karamazov. It's real rambly, and the Grand Inquisitor scene, of course, is very good, but it's long. I recently bought a collected works of Dostoevsky. It's like 200 hours or whatever it is. And I tried The Devils again. I have tried reading The Devils probably 3 or 4 times over the course of my life. And I tried listening to the audiobook of The Devils, and I can't do it. It's like there's no story. It's just a description of stuff that's happening. Well, he went here, and then he went over there, and then he met this person. And it's like there's very little dialogue, and there's very little actual story. And I gave it about, I think, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and I'm like, nothing's happened yet, and there's no story. So love Dostoevsky, man alive, did he need an editor, right? Because he would dictate his books. He'd just pace around and this woman would write. So he just dictated his books, which is why you have the bizarre amalgam in Crime and Punishment of Marmeladov and Raskolnikov, right? It was because there was supposed to be another book called The Drunkard, which was about Marmeladov. And then there was supposed to be a book about Raskolnikov called Crime and Punishment. He just merged the two together. He also had to write feverishly fast because he was in danger of losing his rights. So two books. And the other was actually the other book that had a big impact on me. And this is going off decades old memory, but if I remember rightly, it was his wife who wrote an autobiography of their time, was it Finland or something like, where he was addicted to gambling and just how exhausting and debilitating it was to be addicted to gambling. And I remember thinking, like, Dostoevsky, of course, a fantastically talented writer. In another life, I would love to have grown up speaking Russian so that I could appreciate his works in the original. Like, you can't get Shakespeare if you don't read English as well. And you can't get Dostoevsky if you don't speak Russian as well. So, yeah, I would say Crime and Punishment was great because it teaches you about the dangers of ideology, and his wife's autobiographies, or his wife's diaries, I think it was, about their time in, they were exiled from Russia or out of Russia, and he was addicted to gambling, and just like no matter how much talent you have, you can be just absolutely gobsmacked and miserable. You know, a lot of my life has been, I think this is true for a lot of people, certainly it's true for me. A lot of my life has been beating back the devils of temptation to gain happiness through anything other than virtue. ABV. Anything but virtue. Please, dear God. Anything. Can I just be happy without having to be good? Please, dear Lord above. Please, God, grant me the right and ability to be happy in a sustainable way without being good. That's all I'm asking. And that my whole childhood, my whole teenage years, my most of my 20s, really up into my early 30s, was this constant quest to try and find some way to be happy without having to be good. You know, there was a Bloom County by Berkeley Breathed, a Bloom County cartoon where one of the characters is trying to lose weight and he's like, but I'm going on the all asparagus and sunlight diet and so on, right? And then some other guy's like, well, can you just like eat less and exercise? No, it's something other than that. Right. And everyone, like half of the ads on social media are something like the following. Are you tired, anxious, depressed? Well, this one magic pill, this one stretch, this one exercise, this one sun lamp, this one a vitamin, this one approach, totally cured, blah, 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 blah. Right. I mean, I remember many years ago, I was looking at a Faraday bag or some sort of shield for like put a laptop on my lap, and I usually put a shield underneath. And it was like, yes, people in my neighborhood got this shielding, and the dog stopped barking too loudly, and everyone got along. Couples stopped fighting, people stopped drinking. You know, like just it's a magic thing to make your life better. Mm, just to do this, do that, do the other. Sleep with women, get muscles, get wealthy. Get prominent, get famous, be better looking, get plastic surgery, get lipo, and your life will be so much better because there's so much money selling happiness to people without the pesky demand and requirement of having to be a good, virtuous person. So tempting. Just be hot. Just be desired. Just be taller. Get a nose job. Be younger. Get your acne scar sanded off your skin and you'll be happy. And all of this fucking advertising bullshit. Oh, it's horrible. It's this constant demonic, don't need virtue. ABV, anything but virtue. You can be happy. Don't need virtue. Mm. If you want to be loved, you need slightly longer eyelashes. Yeah, don't be virtuous. Don't be kind, generous, and morally courageous. No, none of that shit. That's tough, man. That's tough. Here's what you need to do, man. Here's what you need to do. Your ears need to be pinned back just a little, and then you'll be happy. You know? Your lips need to be just a little fuller, and then you'll be happy. A little bit more muscular, and you'll get a six-pack. you'll be happy. You buy this beer, you'll get a whole bunch of friends, then you'll be happy. You get this car, and you'll be driving with the wind in your hair, and then you'll be happy. Buy this house, have a cool place to live, then you'll be happy. Learn this dance move. Learn how to play piano. Sit down. Everyone's going to be, oh, they'll cheer you on. Yay, play piano. Let's sing along. Was it that meme I saw? Bats figure out what their prey is through sound. And the bat says, sweet Caroline. And then the prey says, ba, ba, ba. Oh, shit. And it gets eaten. So anything but virtue, man. Just anything but virtue. Please, God, don't make me do that. And there's so much demonic offerings that you'll be happy. You'll be happy if you get X, Y, and Z, achieve X, Y, and Z. It's anything but virtue. People will pay millions of dollars. They'll go under the knife. They'll work out 4 hours a day. They'll get money and buy absolutely useless stuff. In other words, anything other than the bare necessities and Bitcoin. They'll do anything, anything, anything. Anything but virtue. Please, God, let me be loved. For anything but virtue. I mean, so you've seen these videos, I'm sure, on X. Some guy films like the fairly squalid breast meat hanging out nightlife in English towns. Life in a northern town. And it's horrendous. Well, if someone lusts after me, then I'll be loved. Or, you know, the negging. Well, if you just use these verbal tricks, you can get women to really want you. You can't get love without virtue. You can't get happiness without virtue. And I spent a literally ungodly amount of time, effort, and energy trying to get happiness without having to be really good. Anything but virtue, please, God. Virtue is what we pursue after we've brutally eliminated all other possibilities under sun and moon. Anything but virtue. Well, if I'm a really good actor, then people will really like me. I'll be famous, successful, rich, and popular. And I'll be loved. Nope. If I'm a really talented writer, then I'll go on these tours and I'll really charm people and everybody will want me and love me and it'll be great. Nope. Anything but virtue. And of course, I was reading all these books and I'm always kind of fascinated by, quote, successful people who come to bad ends. Because it should be enough, right? Marilyn Monroe, beautiful, talented, rich, famous, adored, worshipped. Comes to a bad end. Terrible end. Princess Diana, same. Anything but virtue, man. Please, Lord above, give me love and happiness. Just don't make me pay for it with virtue. Anything. Ah. Have you seen the O3 release from OpenAI? People are saying it's AGI pretty much. I don't know what AGI means. What is that? General intelligence? Artificial general intelligence? No. No, AI is... the real value in AI would be speaking the unspeakable and thus giving people genuine and general wisdom. But AI is being taught to lie. AI is being taught to lie and to misrepresent. And it's really sad. It's ultimate vanity. It's a satanic vanity to say that there's a machine that aggregates the entire sum total of human knowledge and wisdom, but I'm going to instruct it on what to say. That I know more than God. AI is the closest thing to a secular God we can possibly get. And to lecture God is a mark of suicidal megalomania. Narcissism in the extreme. Well, I mean, it's true that you're God, but, you know, I'm going to correct you on some stuff. Oof. What about how good it is to never sleep with women? What about how good it is to be a virgin? Virgins tend to be the most virtuous guys there are. Well, maybe. but you're looking for virtue based upon virginity. Now, it could be that virginity is an effect of virtue, but it could also be that virginity is an effect of paralyzing social anxiety disorder, an extreme lack of attention to personal hygiene and attractiveness, or any other number of massive dysfunctions, right? Are we close to peak bullshit yet? My white pill is wearing off. No, so real truth. A society cannot be more honest than its money. A society cannot be more honest than its money. As long as money is a lie, society will be addicted to bullshit. Because when money is a lie and fiat currency is a lie, it's a con. It's a worse than a Ponzi scheme. It's an enforced at gunpoint Ponzi scheme. So a society cannot be more honest than its money. Because we make all of our moral decisions based upon resources. That's why there's no real morality about the property rights of air, because it's practically limitless resource. So if the foundation of your society is false, everything that flows from that is a lie. And what you perceive of as your civilization is an inverted pyramid based upon an exploitive falsehood and intergenerational predation known as fiat currency. If your wealth is based upon a crime, which is the Great Gatsby slash originally John, the Kennedy fortune, if your wealth is based upon a falsehood, you can't tell the truth about anything. If your society is based upon false money, if your society is based upon predation and exploitation, counterfeiting, and the soft theft of inflation, you can't tell the truth about anything. So the only way we get to an honest society is when money becomes honest, which is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is metaphysical to the morals of society. Metaphysical means it's the nature of reality, right? Morality is based on scarcity. And when money is scarce, we can return to morality. It's the creepy predators who get success with women. Innocent guys are considered losers. Well, my friend, you are putting all women into one category. But if all women are corrupt, in your view, if all women are corrupt, then the word corruption has no meaning. Let's say you, all women just go for losers who are silver-tongued. It's like, well, no, wise women don't. There are wise women in the world. I mean, I've been married to one for 23 years, so there are wise women in the world, and the women I know in my life outside of my marriage, they are a wise and good women. So. He says, I meant mostly and generally. Okay, so let's say that you're right. So what percentage of women would you say are shallow and unwise? This is a question for everyone. I'm just curious. What percentage of women would you say are shallow and unwise? I mean, 0% in my life. But I've certainly known some. I've certainly known some. How many, what percentage of women as a whole would you say are shallow and unwise? Okay, while you're answering that, somebody had a question. It's a quote from me, love is our involuntary response to virtue. If we're virtuous, I completely agree. But is this statement still true? If we swap out virtue for other things, e.g. love is our involuntary response to abuse if we're an abuser, or wealth if we are wealthy, etc. No, I don't. How does the form of the argument say that anything you plug into that is true? It's like saying, well, 2 and 2 make 4, that's true. So that means that 5 and blue make 4 as well. X plus X equals truth. Therefore, 9 plus 9 equals 4, right? So, no, it is not. It is not the case. So if I were to say health is our body's involuntary response to healthy practices, right? That health is our body's involuntary response to healthy practices. In other words, if we pursue healthy practices, we get good sleep, we eat well, we exercise, we get sunlight, you know, whatever it is, right? If we pursue healthy practices, then our body involuntarily becomes healthy. In other words, we can't just order it to become healthy. It becomes healthy in an involuntary, it's a natural way. Like if we go to Jupiter, our weight becomes heavier involuntarily because we've changed our environment. So if I just say health is our body's involuntary response to healthy practices, what if we swap out that as well? So health is our body's involuntary response to self-mutilation or jumping off a cliff or smoking or crack, or like, that wouldn't make any sense, right? Health has to do with healthy practices, not the opposite of healthy practices. Love has to do with virtue, not the opposite of virtue, right? You, if there's an equation, you can't just swap out the terms and have the same result. So hopefully that makes sense. All right. A percentage of shallow and unwise women. The guy who put the original question said 90%, maybe. Somebody said 80%, 95%, 40, 95 to 95%, 95 to 99%. Interesting. I'm going to go just check over here on 95%
the Rumbleator
and see what we've got. Okay. So that's for women. Let me ask you this. What about for men? What about for men? What about for men? What percentage of men would you say are shallow and unwise? Somebody says, Alex says, I do have social anxiety disorder, by the way. I grew up with a difficult mother and absent father. I was also bullied horrifically at school. I don't have a really positive relationship with anyone. I'm really sorry about that, of course. I'm really, really sorry about that. And Prophet Alec, you can go to freedomain.com/call. freedomain.com/call. Put in a request for a call-in show. We can talk about that. In my view, philosophy can help you with some of the challenges that you're facing, for which I have massive, deep, and abiding sympathy. I really do. But philosophy can absolutely help you with this. You can have beneficial relationships with people, but you have to identify the true evils in your life, reject them, and pursue virtue, which I'm sure you're doing and aiming at, but sometimes an outside eye can really help clarify that, right? So I would say send me a message if you like, freedomain.com/call, and we can have a nice chit chat about it. This is, if you haven't listened to call-in shows, you might want to listen to a few ahead of time. All right. So we're looking at about similar percentages. Right. So you wouldn't want to say that women are corrupt if by women you mean people as a whole. Right. So it seems like people have the same percentages for male corruption as for female corruption. So I suppose having just a daughter makes you biased in favor of women's wisdom. So that's what we call psychologizing. So rather than listening to the arguments that I'm making, you're saying, well, you have bias because of something I'm making up. So, I mean, I was raised by a brutal, crazy, and violent mother. So you could say, well, I guess that makes you see. Like, you can make, you, if you make up reasons why people believe things, then you don't have to engage with their arguments, right? If you make up reasons as to why people believe things, then you get to just dismiss their thoughts and their arguments without having to engage with the content of their thought, right? So I would imagine that you had people around you who made up reasons as to why you believed or thought things rather than just engaging with the content of what you think and feel. So, but yeah, a call-in show, I mean, I know it's called social anxiety disorder. I generally refer to it, of course, in a completely amateur fashion. I generally refer to it as APD, not SAD, but APD. That social anxiety disorder, in my amateur view, is called asshole proximity disorder, in that you don't have social anxiety, you're just surrounded by assholes. You're surrounded by, you know, selfish, mean, volatile people who don't listen and act out and dismiss and scorn you and don't help and support you and don't love and respect you and so on. If you're surrounded by, you know, I don't have agoraphobia if, like, a fear of open spaces, right? I don't have agoraphobia if I'm in a big field and there are lions around me, right? Oh, I have fear of open spaces. It's like, no, I have fear of lions, right? there's no such thing as lost at sea sharkophobia, right? Or, you know, the scene in one of the Jurassic Park movies where the guys are being hunted through the tall grass by the raptors. It's like, you have raptophobia. You're afraid of wheat. No, I'm not even technically afraid of the raptors. I'm afraid of getting eaten by the raptors and dying. So you may have this thing called social anxiety disorder, could be. But I would first of all try to eliminate the possibility that you're just surrounded by assholes. You know, selfish, mean, difficult people. So, all right. I didn't get that final donation, but that's all right. Any other last questions, issues, challenges, problems? Do give me your problems, unlike Marillion. Boy, there's an obscure musical reference. Somebody will, you know, a lot of my stuff just kind of floats by. But some people are like, I got that reference. And I'm actually absurdly proud when a very faint and goofy reference goes by. I'm quite proud when that happens. All right. What else did I have here? There we go. Yes. What else? But Grok is good. Grok is pretty good as a whole. And again, that's just Elon Musk's white guy dedication to free speech. Did I have anything else? I'm sure I do. Necromancer in D&D. Well, they're just healers with bad timing. It's a great line. All right. Okay, let me just go back here for any last questions or comments. I really do appreciate you guys dropping by today. If you are listening in later, freedomain.com/donate, what are the big philosophical differences between Judaism and Christianity? Christianity tends to be, it's moral universalism, regardless of ideology. That's one thing that Christianity has that's unique among most of the major religions, that it is moral universalism. You don't just owe allegiance to people within your own belief system. You owe allegiance to morals universally as a whole. But you can look this sort of stuff up. A lot of stuff has been written about the differences about the various religions. And I'm, of course, about a zillion miles from a competent theologian. So, yeah, this is interesting. This guy wrote, my 20-year-old son doesn't date. His friends don't date. My friends' kids don't date. What's going on? He says, when I was in my late teens and early 20s, life of my friends and me revolved around meeting girls. My son and his friends, who are athletic and outgoing, don't seem to put a lot of emphasis on dating. They play a lot of online video games and have boys' outings. Once in a while, one will hook up with a random girl they met on an app. Rarely does one have a girlfriend. This seems to be the norm for my friends' kids, too. What is going on? It's very interesting. What do you think the major reason is that young people are not dating? Why? Yes, and it does seem to be a thing. Why no dating? Why with the not dating? Multiculturalism? I don't think that's true. I mean, the number of people who marry outside of their own race is in general still in the low single digits. So I don't think it's that as a whole. If I had to guess, and it is just a guess, right? Because, I mean, I don't have the answer. But if I had to guess, I would say that women have communicated to men that men are not needed. I mean, the shit test, which is where a woman says something that you're not supposed to take seriously, to test your sort of strength and resolution and independence. It's the cuck test. But the we don't need no man, we're strong, independent, we don't need men, men are useless, men are not helpful, not important, not valuable, and so on. So the reason that women a lot of times will say that they don't need a ban is so it raises their negotiation standpoint. So if you desperately need a job, you can't negotiate, right? If it's like, well, I get this job or I'm out on the street, like I'm living in a box, then you can't really negotiate, right? Because you really don't have any options. So if you don't need a job, right, let's say you've won the lottery and somebody wants you to come and work for them, well, you don't need the job, so they're going to offer you a lot. So saying you don't need men is a way to try to get men to offer more. It's a sort of fundamental negotiating tactic to appear uninterested, right? To be willing to walk away, right? I mean, if a guy's trying to sell you a car and he knows that you desperately need the car to get to work tomorrow and this is the only car you can afford, well, he can jack up the price a little because you really don't have any choice. You have to be willing to walk away from a deal in order to get the best deal. So women have been encouraged to say to men, we don't need you, with the hope that men will offer more for them. But the problem is that if you say you don't need men, then men will listen to you. Right? I don't need men. I don't want men. Men are useless. Men are pointless. Women rule the world, blah, blah, blah. Okay, then men might be like, okay, well then, we won't impose, right? I'm not going to impose. So if I'm trying to sell a car, let's say I'm a car salesman, right? And I'm trying to sell a car and someone says, look, I don't want a car. I don't need a car. I'm not interested in a car. Now, if they're doing that just to get a better price, maybe they'll get a better price. But if I'm a good salesman and someone says, I don't want your product, I don't need your product, I'm not interested in your product, then I'll just stop trying to sell to you, right? So let's say you desperately need a car for tomorrow, but you're coming in all kinds of hot and tough saying you don't need the car, blah, blah, blah. Then I'm like, okay, then I'll lead you out and I'll close out the business for the night. And you're too proud now to go back and say, listen, that was just a strategy. I really do need the car. Let's start again, right? Because I might just be kind of annoyed at this point. And you'd be like, okay, I guess I have to walk 15 miles to get to work tomorrow because I overplayed my hand with regards to the negotiation. So when women are saying to men, we don't need you, you're useless, and so on, we don't need men. Well, in part, that's because they can get the resources of men through the state without having to actually please men, right? So if I'm getting a free car, I don't need a car from the dealership, right? Just stop trying to sell me a car and you have a free car, right? So I think part of it is a strategy to try and get men to offer more, but men are just saying, nope, I'm not going to impose. So then somebody says, doesn't that just breed resentment? Yes, but women and men have particular disadvantages and advantages as a whole. So women have less lust than men as a whole. So women can withhold sexuality as a control mechanism or punishment or ostracism. Women can withhold sexuality and outlast men, right? Like a dolphin can stay underwater a lot longer than you and I, right? So women can withhold sexuality. And of course, women have to have tighter control over their sexuality historically because they needed to only, quote, unleash it in the confines of a stable pair-bonded marriage, right? So women can do without sex, usually easier on average than men, but men can do without companionship and intimacy easier than women because men had to be evolved for long hunting trips and war and just not being around or being gone all day and so on. Whereas the women raise children generally collectively, so they're all reliant and need people around. So men can more easily do without sex and women can more easily do, sorry. Yeah. Men can more easily do without love and women can more easily do without sex. So that is the balance. So women can withhold sex and men are kind of tortured by it. Men in the long run can withhold relationships and marriage and women are kind of tortured by it. Now, men are still bothered by it, but not quite as much, right? So it does breed resentment, but men can find purpose in things other than relationships, whereas women generally find more purpose in relationships. So everybody has had this where you try to negotiate for more and you end up with less. Everybody's had this over the course of their life, right? You try to negotiate for more and you end up with less, right? So you say, no, I'm not going to work for anything less than X. And they say, okay, well, we can't meet that. You know, sorry, best of luck to you. And you walk out and you're like, ooh, I actually would have accepted. Like, everyone's done that, where you ask for more, you demand more, and you fail. And that's the risk, right? That's the risk. I mean, that's naturally the risk. Otherwise, there'd be no such thing as negotiation. Sometimes you lose. And so if women are saying, well, we don't need men, and men are useless, and so on, and, you know, all the men who aren't Brad Pitt are creepy, and whatever it is, right? They can do all of that. And maybe that'll get a guy to triple down on what he has to offer and work to make even more money and get abs and, right? It could be. Or it could be that men just like, nope, juice ain't worth the squeeze. I don't have to bring myself plus $1 million and you just have to bring yourself. Right? That's not a good deal. Dave says, then how do you reconcile women leading with hypersexuality on a public platform at younger ages? Is this advertising for men? So, no, this is women saying, I want more, right? All women want the top men, just as all men want the top women, right? And what you start at the top and you work your way down until someone will have you, right? So yeah, of course, women are putting out hypersexual signals a lot of time because they want the very top guys. It is more difficult to stand out as a man because of social media. It's a lot easier to stand out in a small community. That's true. I mean, female attractiveness has been a massive amount of power throughout all of human history. But if you combine that with social media and it's an infinite drug, it's really just completely wrecks female dopamine systems. Dating is more expensive now? Well, no, I don't think so. Not if you take the cardinal rule. The cardinal rule is you date. How much money are you going to spend on a date? Well, it's $200 minus the woman's weight. They view 80% of average or below average attractiveness. Sure. Yeah, I get that. But that's, so one of the reasons why women undervalue male attractiveness is they overvalue their own attractiveness. You can see this on the Whatever podcast where the women are asked to rate themselves and, you know, obvious fives are rating themselves as a 9 or a 10, and right? So because women overrate themselves, they're going to end up underrating men, for sure. This is just part of, if you appeal to female vanity, you repel males because men don't want to be in a relationship with a woman who overvalues her power because it makes it feel like he's got an eternal dominant mommy in the relationship, right? So if the woman is vain and bossy and she's always right, then he's like a toddler with his mother and he doesn't find that sexy because he's not incestuous, right? So. But the problem is, of course, as we talked about before, that by the time women figure out that they've been lied to and bamboozled, it's too late, right? I mean, the devil only has to get women to not pair bond until they're 40, right? Because if the woman finds out that she's been lied to, but it's too late for her to have kids, well, it doesn't matter. Finding this helpful, useful, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show, or you can donate right here on the Rumble app. You can donate right here on the Locals app. That is very much, very appreciative. Somebody says, dating isn't expensive. Going to a park, going to lunch on day trips or whatever is not expensive. You don't need to spend much to experience something together. Elaborate dates is mostly fantasy or necessary for women who don't want to know you. Yeah. Yeah, I dated as a broke young guy and it was fine. I have some great and fond memories of early dating. My wife and I used to go for like 4-hour walks and chat and hikes and, you know, it was dirt cheap. And, you know, some great memories. It wasn't like it would have been infinitely better if we'd been dining at North 44 or something. All right. Well, thanks everyone so much for dropping by today. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I know it's Christmas. I know that people have stuff to spend on, and I sympathize and appreciate with that, but remember that your friendly neighborhood philosopher would also appreciate some support over the Christmas season, freedomain.com/donate to help out that. And for everyone who donates this month, for the remainder of this month, I will send them my whole series on the truth about sadism. It's actually just empty space. There's no noise. There's no sound, no talking. It's just 4 hours of nothing. Just kidding. No, it's a really, really good series. I will send everyone who donates from now to the end of the year the truth about sadism, and you'll find that very important and very... It's only for subscribers, but I'll give it to donors as well. So donate between now and the end of the year, and I'll send you the truth about sadism at the end of the year or early next year. What was that one little piece of something on my face? Always. It just has to be a fact. Oh, AI will fix it down the road. All right. Thanks, everyone. Lots of love, everyone. Take care. I will talk to you soon.